You're listening to the Packet Pusher's Priority Queue, our special feed where we dive into the deepest end of the packet pool, swim about seeking networking technology hidden under the surface, and then burst our findings into the cloud. And this week, we're in San Diego, California at the Cisco Live 2012 event, covering Cisco's announcements in the data center space. With us today to discuss Cisco's software-defined networking announcements is Omar Sultan, Senior Manager of Emerging Technologies. Also joining us is CloudToad, Derek Winkworth. Thanks for joining us, gentlemen. And we're going to go over the SDN announcements quickly, somewhat. We're not going to focus on the individual bits of the announcements for the whole podcast because we really want to move into an open-ended conversation about SDN and OpenFlow and why Cisco has positioned themselves where they have in this space. So, Omar, why don't you open us up and just kind of give everybody an overview of what Cisco is announcing with SDN?
Sure, absolutely. So we're announcing a broader architecture or approach from a company perspective. And it's really broader than SDN, right? We talk about network programmability and as the really the broader concept, and there are really three pieces to that. The overall strategy is called One Network Environment, or Cisco One, and it really spans three major technology pillars. The first is something called OnePK, which is a cross-portfolio application development environment. So it's really an SDK, an API, that allows you to write and access our switches and routers for starters, so iOS platforms, NXOS platforms, those sorts of things. The second major bucket is around what is more traditional SDN, so controller and agent technology. So we'll be releasing proof of concept controller and proof of concept agents. And then finally, the last piece is around one of the strongest use cases right now, which is network overlays. And it's really building on our 1000V, which we've been shipping for about 3 years now, about 5,000 customers. A lot of innovations that are wrapped around making that a more full-fledged platform for overlays. So northbound interfaces with quantum API integration for OpenStack. We'll be announcing RESTful APIs. A couple other things, broader hypervisor support, so open source hypervisors, Xen and KVM, VLAN, VXLAN, gateway functionality, and we're upgrading the virtual services capabilities with VPath 2.0 and doing some cool things like service chaining and those sorts of things. So, you know, overall, giving things that a traditionally considered SDN with the agents and the controllers and those kinds of things, but really looking to have a broader conversation about programmability, largely based on talking to actual customers about what they're looking to do. A lot of it is around better access to infrastructure, greater levels of control, not necessarily really caring about separation of control plane or data plane or even particular technologies.
So in other words, well, a lot of the SDN message that we're hearing from some of the vendors, especially the startups that are into this, is we're going to do a centralized controller. We're going to separate control and data planes. And from that centralized controller, we're going to have a model of the network and then push using some application forwarding paths and these kind of decisions out into the network. Cisco is saying, that's nice. We're going to do more. And this is really where the API library comes in.
Yeah, so we're going to do more in a couple of different dimensions, right? So if you look at what OpenFlow does right now, it's really flow tables, layer 2 functionality. So even within that context, part of what we want to do is really expose the entire networking stack. If you're going to do networking, you've got to look at everything all the way from transport up to management, operations, orchestration. That being said, we see that as one mode when it comes to programmability. Other folks don't necessarily care for needing to separate that out. They just want better visibility. They just want to be able to set up these overlay networks to support their cloud environments or virtual server virtualization, those kinds of things. So hence, you know, you kind of see a little more depth in two directions.
So if we've got APIs that Cisco is going with up and down the stack, first of all, you probably mentioned it real quick, but say again what APIs are going to be available on what platforms?
So it'll be the iOS platforms, XE, XR, and then NXOS.
Okay, so pretty much across
routers and switches for right now. So you'll see across, you know, ISR, ASR, Catalyst, Nexus. So pretty much the things that are running in your data center is what we're playing. You know, it's not going to be exclusionary. Really, our view for OnePK, it'll be a horizontal feature that's available across the infrastructure. It'll be just like any other OS feature.
It's going to show up on iOS, may or may not be licensed.
It'll be licensed. I mean, we license everything, right? Just it's a way of keeping track of what features are getting used and those kinds of things. You know, whether it costs or not is a different conversation. To be honest, we haven't figured that piece out yet. As we get closer to releasing stuff, we'll get that piece figured out.
So then the next question is, I've got it, I've licensed it, whether it costs me something or not. It's sitting there. how do I now talk to these APIs? What languages am I going to be using to get at the APIs and the information that's exposed there?
So we're starting with some of the basic Java and C, and then we're looking at opening up other development environments based on what's out, you know, based on customer demand. The long-term vision really is to kind of meet developers where they are. You know, if you're a Python programmer or whatever programmer, at the end of the day, we're looking to be able to deliver broader support so whatever you're using, you can use. You know, we've had conversations. Different communities have different preferences from a programming perspective. You know, one of the things we're in discussion with our customers about is what the sequencing looks like. So, you know, if you look out a year and a half, 2 years, it'll be pretty comprehensive. We're, you know, we're starting with where we see demand now, and we're talking to customers to try and figure out how we get from here to there, what order.
Yeah, I mean, Derek, I know you got some background in C, but as we were talking last night, I called you a bit of an anomaly because network engineers typically these days, they're more script-oriented, mm-hmm. Perl and you know, maybe Python or Tickle, something like that, as opposed to C or Java programming. I mean, so there's a couple of different people that I could see being interested in wanting to leverage these APIs. And one would be guys like me who don't do software development for a living but are very comfortable scripting and maybe want to do something fancy or some rich decision making that they could use APIs to accomplish that goal, but don't want to do it in C. Or then big companies who have a software development team and have people that can that could write a very customized orchestration application, let's say, very specific to their environments. So there's two different kind of folks there. So I mean, it kind of begs the question: do network engineers really need to be programmers too? Is that the world we're heading to?
I think it depends on what you're trying to accomplish, right? I think for some folks, their scripting capability meets their needs. So I think at some degree that we've all been programmers of some sort. I think for others, they are going to want to get full-fledged, highly specialized programming capabilities. I don't think everyone needs to be certified on a particular platform. And that's one more thing you need to worry about, routers, protocols, and C+. And I know you've had some, you have some thoughts on where to go with this as well.
Yeah, I don't know if it's, I think programmer is probably too specific. Largely, a lot of what's driving network programmability is more re-envisioning what the infrastructure is, right? It's not a collection of systems managed by different teams anymore. It's one system that's in the critical path of the delivery of an application. And I think that's a lesson maybe that we can take away from cloud, where they built these automation tools specifically to automate provisioning and troubleshooting of infrastructure for the delivery of applications. And when you look at infrastructure as one system, then all kinds of questions pop up. Well, how can I make the system do what I want it to do? And if everything's individual autonomous systems, right, that were and the functionality on those autonomous systems is closed and it's purpose-built, then it's not going to do what you want it to do. And I think that's what's driving the network programmability. It doesn't mean that your network guys are going to become programmers. I think they're going to have to start thinking of the infrastructure as one system. They're going to have to start thinking more like systems engineers. And programming may very well be part of that, depending on their needs.
I think it becomes a level of depth that you want to engage in, right? I mean, I think for some network admins, you know, GUI-based tools and stuff are fine for what they need to do. Others, you know, they have a level of proficiency, turn them loose on the CLI, they're fast, they're efficient, they can get a lot accomplished. I think this kind of becomes the next level where you can even dig a little bit deeper and really get into the internals, you know, using the AP, you know, using the language of your choice and using these APIs. For some folk, I can see, for Derek, I can see him turning loose and doing all sorts of amazing things with this. For others, you know, it's not going to be anything that A, they're interested in, or B, is really relevant to what they do on a day-to-day basis.
Derek, you just hit on something there that we got to talk about more in this context, which is you said you need to look at the network as a whole system. You need to look at the network as a holistic entity and then design it to perform some task as opposed to, hey, this is a router, and actually we were talking about this before the show. Well, okay, it's a router. How do you turn on routing? Well, you say, router OSPF 10, and then you kick off that process, and you throw stuff in an area, and now it routes. Well, why did you do that? because it's a router. It has to route. And their thinking doesn't go more than just what's inside that box, as opposed to, well, why did you buy that route and why are you running OSPF and why did you structure the area the way you did? And what is the business goal that you're trying to accomplish by setting that up? As you know, did you just look in a book and someone said that was a best practice, so off you go? Or did you design everything for a reason?
Why does a VLAN need to be on a router? Mm-hmm. You know, this switch needs to be in VLAN 10. It's not because that VLAN's actually got a nice color red with some pretty shoes and a nice set of bangles. It's got a purpose. You know, it's not. It doesn't live in a vacuum. And you go back to this cloud. You said before that cloud has created all these automation tools. I see the public cloud is going to create a bunch of interesting proof of concept. I see the public cloud as a nice proof of concept lab for automation and orchestration. And if things can work in public clouds, then they can pilot those for us. Then we can bring them into the enterprise and actually do real work with them instead of just providing this sort of lowest level common denominator, but at scale like they currently do. But they're also demonstrating to us how to systems engineer. So if you're trying to build a data center that can hold, you know, like Facebook and Yahoo are doing, where they're holding like 100,000, 200,000 machines in a single facility, that just means you've got to change your whole mindset. You can't treat a server as that's the BlackBerry Enterprise server, that's the database server over there, and over there is our Oracle system. Because if you've got that many machines, you can't think of it as just one. You have to think of them as, you know, a coordinated whole. And there's a mindset shift, which the cloud, if you read up on the public cloud, you can see the sort of systems engineering, their discipline, attention to detail, focus on, you know, structured breaking down of all the systems into different layers. Like even the enhancements to the physical part of the data center. So Facebook's Open Compute Project changes the way we look at racks. Up until now, anything with a 19-inch rack just went there, mm-hmm. and we put a 20-amp commando under the floor. Get in, you know. Now all of a sudden we're saying actually a pair of 20-amp commandos from an AB phase only gives us 5 kVA. I actually want to have 15 kVA today. Mm-hmm. Should we be delivering AC? What about putting DC power in? This is systems engineering. This is more than just. But SDN is, you know, the whole idea behind, to my mind, SDN and OpenFlow, which is where we talked about in the past, and SDN more generally, is about getting visible tools, network management. You know, we used to call them network management tools. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to replace the term network management with SDN because network management is going to be forever tied to SNMP, I think. And that API, you know, the data that comes back from SNMP is just not rich enough or full enough of information.
Real-time enough, it's point-in-time state information, you know, in the form of traps. It's, you know, whatever you grabbed when you pulled the OID. Hmm. It's very finite, and it's very point-in-time, and it's not –
That's right.
You're reacting to something that's already happened as opposed to getting information from the network in real-time, being able to do something with it, make an intelligent decision about things.
I think you also end up being gated by the MIB, right? I mean, that's one of the reasons we rolled out the XML schema on the NXOS is – customers are no longer constrained by us publishing an updated MIB. It's there. The scheme is there. If it's available in the switch, or even the UCS, have at it. I think this goes even a level deeper than that. And if the information's anywhere in the switch, you can pull it out. But to the point you were making, I think we need to be careful when we try and see the transition from service provider to enterprise. I think the one difference I see is for service providers, it's a profit center. Their network is their business. Hmm. For enterprises, still for the most part, they tend to be cost centers. And the investment model looks very different. I mean, that's why you see a lot of this aggressiveness in investment, because I work for service providers. If you can go to if you go to your management and say, hey, invest a buck, I can make $1.50 back, they'll spend.
Yeah, you're getting into my wheelhouse there, because I'm about to go a cloud provider regards their IT as a profit center, so they actually use accrual accounting and don't use ITIL procedures.
Yep.
They're not doing cost management or risk mitigation. They're actually saying, we'll take risk because it's a reasonable investment.
Yep. The hurdle for enterprise, I think, ends up being a lot higher. It tends to be, okay, you got a flat budget, you got a declining budget.
Mm.
What are you going to do? How are you going to handle this? And the investment model looks very different. The questions we get from our enterprise folks, you know, they have to approach the investment very differently.
So Derek, you're drumming your fingers on the table. I know I tap my foot when I got something busting I'm about to say. Is that your tell when you tap your fingers like that?
Yeah, it is. It is. I mean, there's certainly operations implications on test, and management implications. I think today, though, you know, when people talk about, well, will it make my life easier? I think they're reacting to SDN in a under what we've come to accept as an operational model in this day and age, which is underfunded and understaffed. And what can I do just so that I have to do a little bit less, right? Or I can maybe make a few less mistakes. And I think what SDN to me is much broader than just operational concerns. I think it's an opportunity for people like myself and other engineers to actually deliver something of value back to the enterprise that hired you, other than keeping the network alive that they all hate, right? Mm-hmm. And now we'll be able to actually, you know, tailor our infrastructure and make it actually deliver services specific to the business. I think that's what SDN is going to provide for us.
Absolutely. I think that at the end of the day, that's the bigger thing. And we talk about, you know, if we end up with this glorified network management, we kind of missed the boat. I think when you can do things like that, that's where you start to really unlock the value of programmability and those kinds of things.
Yeah. There's a use case for the management stuff because, you know, network guys think about pulling more data out of their routers or their switches and getting excited about that kind of stuff. If you give me a better way than SNMP to do that, mm-hmm. Ooh, yeah. But that's just one thing.
Yep.
When you look at a whole network, every network's different, right?
Sure.
I've worked on a bunch of them, and every single one is different. Why is it different? It's different because there was a cost model that was involved and that was budgeting. There were specific needs that went into provisioning a certain amount of bandwidth or lighting up a certain number of VLANs. There was some service that you were needing to deliver in a particular way that required a certain security paradigm, and so you installed intrusion detection, but not prevention in one case, but prevention in a different case mm-hmm. because you were trying to solve a different sort of a problem, and then you put a firewall here and here and separated these segments. It was a design that got put together to solve specific problems and deliver applications in a specific way. And so every network, therefore, is different.
Mm-hmm.
But we're at a point where we do – everything's almost cookie cutter and we try to bring the lessons we learned not the lessons we learned as much as the way we did things in our previous jobs into our new jobs, and those things don't always fit. So you take a step back and we go, okay, every network's different. Every network has unique requirements. It's never a one-size-fits-all, even though we try to take building blocks that are common, put them in. We provision and do different things with them. When you take now SDN as a flexibility layer, you look at the opportunity to deliver services in now not just a unique way in the way you put the components together using standardized protocols. Now you've taken that and built upon that with an ability to truly deliver something unique and special just for an individual business that is very customized. I'm not working for a huge company right now. I don't have a huge network I'm dealing with. But I have applications right now where I couldn't get done with a combination of EIGRP and BGP certain routing procedures exactly the way I wanted to.
Yep.
I couldn't do it. It just wasn't there because the protocols inherently are not able to do what it is I'd exactly like to do. With SDN, doing API calls, I could do that. So it's taking the unique needs of my network, which isn't even a huge one, and saying, you have the flexibility to customize this just as much as you want to. Analyze the problem, look at it from an engineering perspective, figure out what you would do to solve this particular problem and make your business go better, be more resilient, have a better efficiency as it pushes data across the network, mm-hmm. and make it happen.
Yep.
SDN, APIs, give me that ability that sometimes with standards, you just can't really do it quite how you want.
I think the benefit is you get the specificity, right? So you get to take a broad set of tools and pull the couple that make the most sense for you. So it's not a broad-based solution. You know, if you're a company, you're trying to sell to as many people as you can. So you build a broad-based solution. Sometimes it can be imprecise or be a little overwrought for what you're trying to accomplish. So the nice thing with the API is you can pull the data you want. You can slice and dice it specifically to how you want it, which I think is a benefit. I think the flip side is Derek's point. We start to get into flow engineering, though. It's not packet engineering. It's not hop, hop, hop.
Right.
You know, if you get you know crusty old you know Bell system guys, like hell, we've been doing that for years. You engineer end to end voice circuits. You don't say okay, I've got the voice of the next hop. I don't care about it. You look from here to there and have a continuous conversation about how you engineer. And I think we do that. If you're going to look at the application's specific support, you'll look at the lifecycle of that, you know, entire application stream. And I think that's the flip side, right? We can make certain things easier, but I think the onus comes on us as networking folks to start providing a different level of integration and insight as we design stuff.
But it's a different way of thinking now about
absolutely.
That. And it's intimidating, maybe, because there's a rut. We got into this rut, you know, we build the networks the way we built them, what we were used to, and it mostly worked, and that was good enough. And now it's not good enough.
It is, because there's a little more transparency, which is scary, and not at the same time. I mean, we used to be scared of voice. Now, not so much. I mean, I still find a lot of customers, video gives them a little bit of agita. Because when video fails, it's very obvious. When voice fails, it's very obvious. It's not handled properly. If email fails, not so much. So I think at the end, we can step up. And I think at the end of the day, I don't think we should be scared to step up our game. You know, there's a lot of good tools out there. I think you should be able to step up and say, you know, we're gonna play in this game. We're going to get much more specific about supporting how we do our applications. And I think we're giving folks the tools to be able to do that and do it with some level of confidence. I think part of this might have been a little more work. Yes. I know you're looking a little...
yeah.
You're looking a little skeptical across the table there.
Yeah.
No, I'm not... The challenge comes in that there is a different skill set that is going to be required to take advantage of programmatic APIs on the network
sure.
for the guys that are used to making the network do what it does. So the network engineers that sit at a company mm-hmm. and design, build, and implement a network and mm-hmm. then keep it running afterwards have a certain skill set that's mm-hmm. been, I don't want to say stale, but it hasn't changed overly much over, say, the last 10 or 15 years.
Yep.
Now you're saying, okay, so if you want to do some really interesting things that go beyond standards and meet a very unique business need, here's an API that if you write code, it will allow you to do that, a customized solution for your business to accomplish something that you need to do. And then all of us are sitting there going, I know some Perl. You know, is that good enough? You know, and then... I do have a programming background. I have a computer science degree, and I did programming back in the day. Never done it professionally, but I know a good bit about it. I did my share of C for a semester or two. Mm-hmm. Am I dusting off those skills at this point? Is that where this is coming to be really, you know, on top of your game as a network engineer?
I also have a programming background. I started doing assembler on VAXes, so I'm a little dusty. You probably. I think if nothing else, if you've got that kind of background, it's helpful to be talking. You know, if you've been a developer, you know how to talk to other developers. If you have never been a developer, you have no idea how to have a conversation with a developer and give them the information they need and understand what's relevant and not so relevant. So I think there's that piece of it. I think it's, to some point, you look at it as a skill set. It's part of networking now. The same way understanding five years ago, the number of network engineers I talked to that understood power, you know, was almost non-existent, right? If you ask them, how much does this catalyst draw? They'd look at the faceplate and say, you know, the UL plate yeah. and say, okay, it draws X amount. And, we had a lot of over-provisioned data centers at that point because that's how they did power engineering. Because it became an issue, the number of people I can sit there and have a conversation about power cooling or zone cooling, that kind of thing came up. I think this will be the same kind of thing. Where the ones that are going to stay relevant to the field, they'll start developing some set of skills. They don't all have to be hardcore developers, but I think it's going to be something you need to have in your, in your skill set. And I think the reason is there's competition for IT, right? I mean, if I'm a line of business and I'm looking to deliver a Salesforce automation application, I can go to IT. I can go to Salesforce.com, or I can go to any number of other providers, which are giving me agility. They're giving me, you know, a lot of things. We're now providing internal IT the ability to be able to do the same kind of things. But yeah. You got to step, you know, the kind of that you're going to, you know, at some point you got to step up your game, and that's kind of the broader, you know, that's kind of the broader challenge, right? I mean, a lot of customers come to us and say, I want to be able to do, I mean, I love Amazon, but I want to be able to do Amazon in my own data center. Great. Okay, at that point, you can certainly do that. This certainly makes it easier, but there's certain – Amazon made a bunch of investments. You need to mirror those to some degree to be able to deliver some of that functionality. It's not about – at some point, it stops being about routers and switches.
It's good that you put it that way, because I was thinking, to Derek, the point you made earlier, which is to best leverage SDN, it's not going to be, I have a new way to pull stats off of this router. Yeah. It's, I have the ability to deliver a service end-to-end, and you have to know, to be able to do that, you got to envision the system and then be able to design the system and then be able to push that design into a whole lot of devices across your infrastructure as a whole.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. You know, there's firewalls and load balancers, IPSs, WAS boxes. All of those are network nodes, and all of those are in the delivery path of the application. And we, you know, when you turn up some new application, you know what services that's going to need, and you know you got to get that application from this VM or this host, you know, through these switches, through this router, through all these things out to whatever network it's going to, whether it's the internet or someone else's private network. And there should be an end-to-end view of that, right? All that stuff exists for the delivery of that application. And so, and I think, you know, I don't want to get too meta, but I think that infrastructure is an extension of the application. That's my view of it. I think if you look at it from that perspective, all this is necessary for the application. It's part of the delivery of the application. Then we can start moving away from, well, we have a firewall team, and they're going to put a firewall in the middle of this network I designed, and they're telling me they can't do routing. So I got to do something special around that firewall to get packets to go through it, right? Mm. Or, you know, somebody manages this IPS, and they don't want to run L2 mode. They want to run L3 mode. And guess what? There is no routing subsystem that matters on that device. And rather than having this fragmented, inconsistent data center, it becomes consistent. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I think that is clearly the future. I have a hard time envisioning that as an industry not going in that direction.
I think that's a huge point, right? I think things like 1PK even out the bumps, and they create this consistent functional networking layer that kind of decouples what's underneath, right? And it gives you this consistent environment that you can then program to and do those kinds of things. You know, I think if you're a huge service provider where your data center is a cost center, you throw people at the problem. Most enterprises don't have that luxury. So now we can start to bring technology to bear to be able to deliver that kind of thing.
Now, and just to contrast this, some mm-hmm. people were saying, well, aren't we really doing this with OpenFlow already? Aren't the guys that are doing OpenFlow kind of doing these things? And I think that's a point worth making, because it is partially true that you can do some of these concepts with OpenFlow, in that you're doing flow-based management, and you can program at least forwarding tables end-to-end across an OpenFlow-enabled network. But there's more to it than that. I mean, OpenFlow is really kind of one direction. OpenFlow is controller down to the switches. It's not going the other way, whereas the way you guys, as in Cisco, have chosen to go is we want bidirectional communication between the network elements and the controller and the other way around.
So there is. I think we put more emphasis on that, right? You know, I think my two cents in the long run, I think the northbound piece would be the ability to expose what's going on in the network and present it to the apps and make it really an extension of the app environment, I think is where the big payoff will be. You know, the southbound piece I think is interesting. It solves a lot of initial things. But again, it comes down to the argument about different versus better. Is it a different way? Yeah. Is it a better? We'll see. I mean, again, a lot of customers I talk to don't care about that separation. They just want the programmability piece of it. Mm. They have zero interest in trying to separate out their environment. That's why I kind of chase all three with the announcement. Is like, for these kinds of folks, we give you programmability. You're happy with infrastructure, feature sets, those kinds of things. For others that want that separation, here you go. For others that are looking for more an overlay and want to abstract the network altogether, that's a third piece.
Which isn't to say, I mean, I wouldn't want to mislead listeners and say, well, Cisco's not doing OpenFlow, because there is a tie to OpenFlow.
We are releasing proof of concept or experimental OpenFlow and controller agents. And the reason we term it that way is a lot of what folks want to do right now is play with it. They want to experiment with the technology and experiment with the technology, if nothing else, to learn the broader concepts, right? You know, we talk about this as a mindset. This is a shift in mindset as much as it is the technology shift. And at some point, you know, the way I learn is I sit down, you know, at the console and with the manual in my lap and play with stuff and see what works and see what doesn't. And that's where we see a lot of the market is in that same same boat. They want to say, okay, what does programmability really get me, and what does it not?
So then one more question that's really worth asking from Cisco's perspective is this. There have been some very rudimentary, some very early discussions in some of the standards communities regarding standardizing SDN. What does it mean? What's it supposed to do? And, you know, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
What's Cisco's take on that? You know, OpenFlow being just the beginning of that. I mean, I'm talking about standards beyond just what the ONF is doing with OpenFlow.
So I think we get into a little bit of semantic minefield. I mean, the definition of SDN is a little bit, somewhat of a semantic battle at this point, right? So,
right.
I mean, for our purposes, we say you talk about SDN.
It is. Let me get a tangent 1 second about software-defined networking is such a nonsense term because, you know, I think, for instance, just give me a couple of minutes to get this off my chest.
Trust me.
Overlay networking is not software-defined networking. And doesn't matter to me if there's a TCAM or not.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a switch, it's a switch, right? An overlay network is just networking,
yep.
Right? And it's software-defined networking. Networks and all computing systems, no matter how specialized, have always been a combination of software and hardware. When I download Cisco iOS image now is pretty large, actually, for iOS XE. I think it's like it's 100 meg or 100 and some meg now.
Some of the iOS SX images are that big as well. Yeah,
yeah, and I know I could think of one vendor is like 300 meg. I'm not. That's not 300 meg of hardware that's magically being teleported over the wire. That's right. Software. And, you know, networks have always been software driven. The hardware does nothing without the software sitting on it. That's computer science. So software-defined networking to me is nonsense. It's a term that means nothing.
I completely agree. I mean, you actually bring up a great point. That's why we're trying to decouple the two, right? So we talk about programmability in general. That's really what customers are looking for. SDN. So part of what the world doesn't need is one more definition of SDN. Right. So, like, the world didn't need one more definition of cloud. So we kind of, you know, unfortunately, there's no one to arbitrate SDN definitions yet. So from our perspective, we use the OpenFlow. We use the ONF definition of SDN and say, okay, this is control planes, data plane separation. That's SDN, and this is what we're doing about it. If you look at the broader conversation about what the different kinds of things customers are trying to do, that's why we kind of look at programmability as a broader conversation. Some of it has zero to do with control plane separation or anything else. It's kind of, you know, I'm going to be able to pop the hood up and, you know, mess around with stuff. And I think for some folks, that's absolutely, they're justified. You know, they have the skill sets, they understand what they're doing, they got the capabilities.
So, do we even need a standard then?
We do. I mean,
standards for SDN, I guess.
Standards for SDN, I'm not sure about that. You need to define what you're trying to standardize.
Right.
But I think we do need standards for the underlying technologies, right? So, I mean, we're at the very early stages of, you know, of this as a set of technologies or programmability or SDN or whatever you want to call it. OpenFlow is not going to be it. There's other things. There's forces. There's other things like Alto. There's other protocols up and down the stack that are coming to bear. OpenStack and Open Networking Foundation have been leading the charge. But, you know, a lot of these other folks, ITU, IEEE, IETF, are also starting to pay attention to this. And I think you'll see more technologies start to emerge on both the agent side as well as the controller side. From our perspective, we think that's a net positive for the industry. We think it'll work when you have a lot of purpose-built technologies that you can pull and pick and choose from to address what you're looking to do. If you want to, you want to focus on QoS, you want to focus on routing, you want to focus on security aspects. We think that's a better direction for the market to go than these large, big Uber protocols that have everything. Because I don't think, there's a lot of networking. There's a lot of stuff that goes on at the networking. Trying to take all that and, force fit into,
it's different from servers, because servers is all about Intel chips. That's your silicon, right? Whereas in networking, we all have different silicon. And the way that packets flow through silicon varies dramatically from platform to platform.
And the use case, at the end of the day, you're running a workload on top of your server, right?
Hmm.
So in the use case, I'm not taking away from the server folks. You have all kinds of different applications, but at the end of the day, you're doing one set of things.
Hmm.
We've had conversations the last couple of days. People do wildly different things with their networks, and they have wildly different priorities. Some folks, it's about cost, optimize for cost, optimize for availability, optimize for security and regulatory compliance. So, you know,
other people are optimizing for performance at any cost. They don't care how much it costs if they can shave another 10 nanoseconds or 20 nanoseconds. And then you have education, which is on the other extreme where performance isn't an issue. Cost is absolutely the overriding issue. And, you know, that diversity creates – you can't just have one product that fits all.
Yep.
On the flip side, you can't have – you know, developing multiple products for multiple markets creates – confusion and, you know, creates manufacturing problems because you're not getting sufficient quantities in a run to actually make it viable.
You know, that's a very interesting point because and maybe that's getting back to the systems engineering statement again. All those industries, all those diverse requirements as a contractor, Greg, when you get called in to here, there, or the other thing, if you have a broader set of tools to deliver a solution to, a specific solution to a specific target audience, isn't that better? Isn't it better to think about it, what you're installing as a whole system with the tools that are available to you rather than, okay, I buy a router that passes packets and somehow I'm going to make this work for the school even though they have this much budget, right?
It's like a gearbox, right? So some companies only use first gear and some companies use all five. Some companies need an automatic gearbox that has no gear, nothing that needs to be – it just goes in and away. You put your foot on the pedal and away you go. But the decision to use an automatic gearbox in a car, which, you know, it just treats it like a dumb engine, has consequences. The gearbox is necessarily more complicated. And when it fails, it tends to fail catastrophically. Networks are very similar. If you just sort of – as you say, your router EIGRP10 engineer, it works fine all the way up to when it breaks. And when it breaks, it doesn't break gracefully. It breaks disgracefully. It, you know, there's little shattered pieces all over the floor. The network's down, and the engineer has no mental equipment, to even know where to begin because it has always worked, but he didn't know why it always worked. So when I go into, say, a new customer site, which is, you know, so in the last few weeks I started working at a site that has just 300 servers, but enormously complicated criticality issues, deeply high profile, it's extraordinarily secret, the data is extraordinarily sensitive. The size of those 3,000 servers in terms of its impact can be like something in the order of 30,000 servers in a normal enterprise because any one of those goes down, there's just this enormous reaction to those. We can't do that. The flip side of it is that – but then again, I was in another place which is an organization that outages weren't really a problem. They were a problem, sure, but we can take risks. We accept risks are perfectly normal. We needed to achieve something, so just go and get it done. So let's just hammer that in place. So we were able to take a completely different approach to the design and say, see all that old stuff over there? Just start it. We're starting again. We're going to do this. How do we do the integration? We'll do it. We'll just make it happen. We don't need to go into proof of concept. We just hammer it in. Let's get out a nail, you know, hammers and pieces of wood and just hammer it until it fits into get the square peg into the round hole and get it done. And that comes down to our discussions around technical debt in the past. You know, you incur a whole bunch of pain around that, but that was the – different companies have different ways of looking at it. SDN is the same, right? Different tools for different jobs. The foundation for what's becoming clear is that OpenFlow has opened up a new view of networking into, say, instead of the CLI being the universal. I mean,
it's a gateway drug.
It's a gateway drug. So if you look back and we started to play with Tickle and EEM, Embedded Event Manager in Cisco's iOS, we sort of played around with it a little bit, and all of us have sort of done a bit of, you know, a little bit of to see here, and then PFR came along, which sort of took the EEM engine and started to say, well, if we created this little piece of scripting engine here that does performance-based, you know, the PFR routing things, we sort of provided an indirect API through the EEM engine into the iOS kernel. And in the sense that the 1PK announcement sort of takes the PFR and replaces it with a whole shim and then a whole container that can contain a whole application that you can write yourself isn't actually revolutionary. It's evolutionary in that sense because PFR is an app that just – uses EEM to tweak stuff in the engine. That's the way it works. And so SDN represents a significant change in the way that we work in that we now have a clash box instead of we won't have a clutch as we change gears. You'll just crash through the gears as you thump them up. So it's a change, but it's still a gearbox. It's still got packets, although now we have to think of it in terms of flows, which comes back to the discussion we were having yesterday where it's applications that our network supports, not packets, right? You don't send you know, this, and that comes down to the only troubleshooting tool that networking has had for 20 years is ping, in a way. You know, you ping a packet, and if it goes out and comes back, you go, woo, done. And what we're finding, of course, is that's no longer possible. In a network which is multi-service, multivariate, incoherently distributed with, you know, the days of when we used to have 50 or 100 servers in the data center and you could look at the IP addresses in your head and go, yeah, that's that server, that you can memorize them all, right? When IPv6 comes around, you're not going to know, looking at a packet sniffer, yeah, or what the source. And I had this argument. I know we're getting a little off topic and I'm starting to get a bit ranty, but I'm really enjoying myself. You know, this guy said to me, he said, I know all the IP addresses in my network. And you know what he did? He did. He really memorized. He had the IP address of every router in his head. He'd just sit there and go, telnet, 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 telnet. You know, SSH. And I'm going like, you are going to have a bad day in a few years when IPv6 come around. He goes, oh, no, I'll just memorize all those. I'm going to get 128? No. You know,
not happening.
He wasn't going to do DNS. He was absolutely adamant that, you know, it's easier if he just memorizes them. It's faster. You know.
But we kind of talked about it yesterday, right? I mean, that's, you know, in a day when everyone, you know, when a data center ran 8 applications and everyone accessed the same 8 applications and you understood north traffic flows and they didn't change from the day you turned the application up, you know, you can do some of that. But if you look at cloud and social apps and mobility and these kinds of things, you get a lot of on-the-fly types of things. And I think we talked about the dynamicness of the applications and then the pull on the underlying infrastructure to keep up with that is going to force, you know, is going to force changes in behavior, whether people are comfortable or not. Because I think, you know, some of the wheels are just going to fall off the operation models of some of the folks that are out there.
I think the wheels have already fallen off our operational models. But you know, we've taken the CLI as far as it can go.
But I think the other point, you know, we talked about ping being the only tool. I think there's probably a subset of our listeners that are supporting voice and video say, you know what, we've had to do this for a while now. This is not new. We've had to be able to do traffic engineering, because I think the most difficult situation in the data center from an operations perspective is not a network failure, because you know it's down. You don't need to go fix something. It's when you get suboptimal routing or, you know, those kinds of things where, you know, things are getting routed all over the place. You have poor performance. You don't know it. I think those are the kinds of things. Mm. There's a lot of that out there that doesn't happen. If it's down, that's easy. Okay, you know your network's down. You need to go do something.
That's right.
If you know you have oddball egress routes on your routing, you know, that kind of thing is difficult for a lot of folks. The GRP10 dudes, you know, they got adjacency. They're happy. They'll go get a beer and they're good.
Yeah.
And a lot of that stuff is transparent if all you're doing is FTP and web traffic and those kinds of things. When you start doing voice or video, you start looking at some of these things. Suddenly, oop. I need to figure this out, because it's not, you know, it's not working anymore. It's another layer of transparency, which is kind of the scary part. But I think it's something we really shouldn't be scared to. I think we can step up to being able to do those kinds of things. And there are tools there. I mean, even with video, right? We got MediaTrace as an example.
Yeah.
You know, being able to troubleshoot and have the network help folks along, right? In terms of, okay, here's something we should.
Very equipment dependent, but yeah, it depends on what hardware you've got, but yeah, it's there.
That's a reasonable example of what SDN can achieve, though. Yeah. Once you expose the information, then Cisco's delivered it as MediaNet by monitoring each hop. So people who don't know what MediaNet is, well, shame on you a bit. this podcast sponsored by. But the MediaNet, basically, in the past when we've looked at QoS, we've looked at it hop by hop. But a MediaNet is an application that pulls the QoS data back from all the devices in the network path. And it can actually show you in the management platform that if you've got, say, a 5-hop network for a video conference extreme, it'll show you that the third hop is the one where the performance is low. Mm-hmm. And it won't just show you that it's the hop. It'll actually show you the interfaces on either side and say it's the inbound on the third hop on this side that's having the congestion.
Yep.
And then you can start to make decisions. And then the second step, of course, is that it's then able to give you some tools to route around it or to manipulate the cost and reconfigure your system to handle that better.
Yep.
So that's an example of applications. And that MediaNet relies on an SDN-type approach to pull data out of the existing routes. So that's here today if you wanted to go and read up on that and get sort of an insight into what we'll have tomorrow.
I think that's the kind of thing it'd be great to be able to move into on a broader basis. So it's not platform dependent or
yes.
It's not application, and it's not even application dependent. You can figure, okay, why is, you know, the DBA is complaining about transaction commit, you know, the rate that a transaction can get committed at. Be able to understand and look at what's, you know, look at that entire chain from, you know, a retail point of sale system all the way to the back end.
Which is where application performance management falls down, because it purports to do that in that it will demonstrate that you can do a database transaction commit and verifies that the latency is within acceptable limits and that the authentication piece worked and the database had storage to write. It verifies that certain elements function, but it doesn't give you any insight into performance, how to best get that particular transaction flow across the network, what really happened in the interim steps, and there were probably several of them, even in a data center environment where things are pretty well contained. There's multiple hops you probably went through to make that happen. Yep. You don't have any of that insight with APM, but SDN could get us there.
Or, I mean, programmability, or at least, you know, 1PK or those kinds of things. I think the other piece is it'll probably be one of the first times the network folks don't end up at the bottom of the hill anymore. Right. You're going to have the transparency to be able to say, I'm clean. You're having Oracle problems. I'm sorry about that. But I can show you empirically the network is doing exactly what we're, you know, what we said it would do. It's not my problem. Because otherwise, it always, by default, you know, if it's just talking, you know, stuff rolls downhill. At the end of the day, I always blame the network guys thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, organizationally, I think this is going to bring the network folks closer to the application folks. I mean, well, for obvious reasons, we're talking about APIs, we're using all those words. But instead of the application guy saying, hey, how come my application is slow, and you're looking at a link and it's 100% utilization, you're like, what did you do? Well, I just rolled out this application. How come it's slow? Well, you know, what's happening here, right?
Yeah, right.
Or they call you on the phone, like, plug this into a switch somewhere because I have to send packets somewhere.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, right?
Yeah.
And you're like, this is going to cost money. You can't just do this. And they're like, plug it in, and when the light goes green, let me know.
Yeah.
And that's their approach to networking. And I think that's a very good point, actually. Aside from the impact that this is going to have on people who design and operate networks, there needs to be an education on the application side that the rollout of an application now includes all of the infrastructure engineering to deliver that application.
Which is not what the virtualization guys want. This came up in our conversation last night, too. You got virtualization guys who just want to see the network as that thing that they send their stuff across, and it's this big cloud, and who cares?
Guys will want to see that, too. At the end of the day, you know, they want to write to LPT1 and just keep shoving data out, and they're happy with it and let someone else deal with it. I think the difference is, I think the other aspect of these kinds of things is it makes a resource. At least this is the goal, right? It makes the network a resource that is consumable to developers in a way they understand, right? So you shouldn't need to be a CCNA to be able to take advantage of this. At the end of the day, if we need developers to understand networking stuff to truly take advantage of this, it's not going to happen. They've got their own challenges. They're not going to sit there and delve into a tangential thing. They'll keep there's no upside, right? They'll keep treating it as an over-the-fence thing, throw the traffic over and make it your problem to go fix. But if you can say, if you can packetize, and if you can package and say, give them the ability to ask for the nearest firewall or ask for, hey, you know, a nice, easy way to say, hey, I need a 10 gig video capable link, and be able to request that from a development environment, it'll do what you said. It'll start driving that. Because I think one of the challenges is we can do all this stuff from a technology perspective. Organizationally, there needs to be some mirroring of this. Right. I mean, for some of you, remember, we used to have a product called VFrame. It was supposed to do orchestration. I used to do a lot of UBCs around VFrame. And one of the things we do is, ask customers, hey, so how do you provision a server today? And a lot of times it turned into a 15-minute food fight amongst the customers, IT people, because they didn't have, there was not good agreement as to how stuff got done.
There's no cohesion.
There's no cohesion. And a lot of times there wasn't any reason to be. You know, open a ticket and then don't worry about it. When the ticket comes back, I do my next step. At the end of the day, we're providing tools, but I think the one caution for the listeners is that they still need to – it's not a proxy for – it's not like social media. Your Facebook friends are not really your friends. This is the same kind of thing where we can give you some tools, but it's not a proxy for sitting down with the server dude or the Oracle DBA and having a conversation about, okay, so how's your application work? What's your expectations?
I didn't flip it around the other way. It's not only is it not a proxy, it's actually an enabler. Now you've got an excuse to go talk to them because you can design a delivery solution that's integrating all the pieces and parts together if you can get everybody on the same page and working together. now you've got a tool, a common tool set to write to, where maybe that would happen. Jude, I think a unicorn just walked across the microphone.
I mean, it's certainly the opportunity, right? I mean, but I think that, and I guess my point is, which kind of got me thinking about it, there's a human component to this, too, that's completely decoupled. Organization, I mean, we talk about it with, you know, if you look at what we did with 1000 Beast and the hypervisor support, part of what we did was get to the point where if server admin wants to vMotion, they don't have to open up three trouble tickets to move it. So try and make their lives easier. At the same time, we're trying to make it easier for the network side at the same time. So it's a loosely coupled model. So the network folks get to set up some policy, and so you get set up a sandbox, and then go like the server admins go play in that sandbox. We want to do the same kind of thing. We want to be able to do the same kind of thing, right? We want to create a sandbox for developers. Here's a big box of, you know, resources. We'll make sure it's secure. We'll make sure it doesn't crash QoS policy for the entire company. Otherwise, go have at it. And I think that's appealing for them, so they don't have to go play Mother May I every time they want to do something. They have flexibility. They have the directness. But at the same time, for the folks that get the call if the network goes down or it gets breached, you have some surety on that end. Because from the perspective that, you know, I've got my Amex, I fire up an AWS instance, I'm done. I don't have to talk to anyone else. I can do whatever I want to. Now, on the back end, a lot of this stuff is happening. Now we're enabling IT to be able to deliver the same kind of experience for their customers, just in general. I mean, this is talking about more than just SDN. I mean, kind of far afield right now, but just broader private cloud.
But that's the use case that drives SDN, is we know that we need to do this. You know, we've talked a lot about how
the
use cases for SDN aren't exactly crystal clear. It's not painfully obvious that we need, which is, there's not one use for SDN, I think is where I'm coming from.
Absolutely.
I think that there's service providers will perceive SDN as this, mm-hmm. and you use, Ruby and Python integrated with their OpenStack platform to achieve, you know, whatever it is they want to achieve.
Yep.
But that enterprise will start to look at it and say, Perl, we need Perl,
mm-hmm.
because that's what the network engineers know, and they're going to do something a bit ad hoc before the enterprise finally gets its gumption together to buy an overlay system that can automate VMware and networking and Microsoft and Linux, you know, the Puppet.
Yep.
Whereas OpenStack can bring it all together using a Puppet or a Chef type application.
Yeah.
So, you know, and then you're going to be at the other end where really large enterprises are going to say, no, it's got to be in Java because all our developers use Java or C.
Yep. Yeah, at the end of the day, you need to meet the ad developers where they are.
Well, you could always just slap Java developers around, really.
That's a different podcast.
You know,
I'm smiling. How do you?
Yeah, in systems, not just IT systems, but also the car being a perfect example. Things, the most successful companies are the best at encapsulating complexity and making it easy to use.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean. Mm. I drive by many idiots on the highway every single day that I can't believe they're still alive, but they drive a car every day. Yes. It's a very complex system. Yep. And the iPad 3, that's the magic of iPad 3, was how intuitive and easy it is to use. And guess what? Underneath that is a great deal of engineering.
Mm-hmm.
And
more than most people realize.
Mm-hmm. Right? I remember when I was a programmer, we went towards commercial off-the-shelf software, and then I actually remember hearing arguments about why would we buy a router from Cisco? We have Route D, right? And the idea was, well, because now we can take time and money that we're spending here and focus on our core mission and it will be less expensive to buy it, right, than to do it ourselves. And we may not be doing it right. That's not our expertise. Well, is SDN – one of the things I wonder, is SDN really going to take off in the enterprise, or are we going to sort of create a new marketplace for people to start tackling different sorts of complexity and building new products that will be bought by enterprises? Products that are built on that programmability.
I think there's a market that's being created here for third parties to look at the APIs that are being presented by vendors like Cisco and say, we can make an enterprise's life easier by putting a layer on top of it, built and speaking to those APIs, because there is a space in the enterprise that they're not going to get into these APIs particularly much. You'll have a few of the geeks and the nerds that get in there and get it and see things that they can do, but their day-to-day is so burdened down by process and just trying to get things done, they're not going to have enough time to develop a holistic system that's going to make the whole network better, or the network, the function of the network work the way that they maybe can envision it. They're just not going to have the time to build that. So maybe a third party then comes in and can – maybe it's not going to be a holistic application that, you know, does everything for you. But it's gonna leverage APIs to solve some specific set of problems. I do think that there is going to be a market that's going to come out of this.
I think there is, but I think at the end of the day, you need a net reduction of complexity, right? You can take the most elegant thing, but if it's built on crappy infrastructure, crappy foundation, there's only so much you can do with it. And all that complexity represents hard costs for our customers, right? And at some point, there is a desire to get rid of that hard cost because it's non-productive. And that's why you look at, you know, everything from VBlocks to cloud, because it's the ability to take that, you know, take that complexity and carpet bomb it and say, okay, I'm going to take my, I want more budget efficiency. If, you know, start day one, 80% of my annual IT but data center budget is chewed up just keeping the lights on, that's not, it's not a desirable condition, and there are different ways of being able to do that. So one of which is, you know, simpler infrastructure convergence, all these kinds of things. One is just give it to someone else and make it their headache. I just want to run applications and focus on my customers. And there are a lot of folks that are trending in that particular direction. They're trying to get out of the infrastructure period, business period, which is kind of interesting if you look at that versus what we, you know, the hype around SDN is going the exact opposite direction about wanting to get totally into the weeds. Like, I mean, like you say, people want to drive cars. They don't want to be they don't want to be mechanical engineers.
And if there's some tool that ends up getting layered on top that we're supposed to be using to do network programmability, mm-hmm. and that application is a big pain in the rear end to use,
yep.
which historically a lot of the orchestration tools and especially the large framework application tools have been, whether it's for application monitoring or network provisioning, you know, but the big orchestration tools that are mm-hmm. out there, they're so friggin' difficult to use in and of themselves. People look at them, look at the purchase cost, look at what it's going to take to implement them, and realize they need to dedicate staff just to keep that that tool up and running and say, yep. forget it. So in my mind, I'm hopeful that APIs are somehow going to take us in a step where the tools become more usable.
I think they can. It goes back to your initial point, right? You know, a small network, you have very specific needs. And I think APIs that allow you to give that, you know, specificity to the solution that gets built, either whether you build it yourself or it opens up an economy for folks to be able to deliver much more targeted solutions, but still do it in a cost-effective manner. I mean, it's kind of like the Apple, the iOS, economy, right? You got a bunch of people that are selling 99-cent apps and making a bunch of money off it because they're hitting a targeted need to, bomb pigs from, Angry Bird.
Did you just announce that Cisco's going to have an app store now?
Yeah.
Or an app that have been written at this API?
Are we going to be able to run Angry Birds directly on the Switch? It'll be like a multicast server.
That's interesting. an app store built on these APIs. That is interesting.
Well, if we don't build it as a networking industry, somebody else will. Yeah. So VMware is already attempting to co-opt SDN with the vCenter platform, and I sure as hell don't want to be configuring a network with the VMware vCenter interface, because it's just going to be it's not the right shape. It doesn't represent the data in the correct way. But they'll certainly try and use that hammer to put the screw into the wall.
I mean, I would expect whether we sanction anything or not, or whether we set up anything formal or not, the developer communities tend to be social community to start off with. So I'd expect something like a GitHub to organically develop, around 1PK, whether we have a handle it or not. And I think we want to, because I think it's helpful.
Logically, it may not be as formal as an app store, right? But mm-hmm. I mean, sure, yeah, communities are going to spring up and people are going to start exchanging code. And look, I did this, or this piece of code does this. You need a Linux box to run it. Here's how you install it. And, these are the bits you need to get it talking to your iOS boxes.
Yeah.
And it does this for you. Go. Yep. Have fun.
Yep.
Hope you extend it.
Yeah.
Write another module for it that adds some more functionality. Wouldn't that be cool?
Mm-hmm.
Why wouldn't that happen? It seems... It's almost obvious now that we're talking about it. So, I mean, you know, talking about the App Store, and so I guess that's really kind of a good place to wrap, because we went from, you know, talking about specifics to kind of getting far afield to what could be to, I think we're trying to solve all the problems of IT in general. So why don't we wrap it? And to those of you listening, thank you very much for listening to this Cisco Live 2012 special edition of the Packet Pushers podcast, published here on the Priority Queue. Greg and I thank Cisco for working with us so that we could cover the show. I want to thank Cloud Toad at Cloud Toad, Derek Winkworth for joining us, and Omar Sultan at Omar Sultan on Twitter. And of course, Greg is at Ethereal Mind, and I am at EC Banks on Twitter. And, you know, please join the thousands of others that that are following the Packet Pushers on Twitter at Packet Pushers. And packetpushers.net is a place to go to read blogs, global community of network independent network engineers that are writing and publishing content up there. Our RSS feeds are up there. And if you got any questions or comments about this show, sometimes these shows really generate people thinking, and we get some interesting comments. If you've got something to say, email us at packetpushers@gmail.com. And remember that too much networking would never be enough.